Welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Matt Manicharian of Sports Info Solutions, joined by Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders. Justin Stein is out today, but we will be riding on without him. Aaron, I know I was up late last night helping to narrow the finalists for the SIS Football Analytics Competition, which, by the way, will take place on Wednesday, July 29th at 8 p.m. on a live YouTube screen stream. I know you'll be judging along with John Park of the Colts and myself. And the first round of judging all of the different, we got about 40 entries in. They're really impressive. It's going to be really hard to get down to that final three, just based on, I can tell you from what I've seen preliminarily.
That is awesome to hear. I'm really glad that there were so many entries. I'm glad that they're really good, and I'm looking forward to learning some new stuff.
Yeah, and I hope we can raise some more money. We've done a pretty good job so far. Everybody really contributed a lot, and I think we can do even more at the live event to try to raise some more for the United Negro College Fund, where all the proceeds are going. But enough of the SIS stuff. Today is about the Football Outsiders Almanac. You've been busy for weeks working on this required reading of the summer. First of all, I want to congratulate you on releasing it. And I guess you finished a week ago now, but I'm sure the media tour has started. Are you exhausted? Are you recovered? How's it going?
It's a ton of work every year. I'm pretty recovered at this point. I'm getting normal sleep now. We are doing a big media tour. I did Good Morning Football yesterday. I'm doing lots of podcasts. I'm going to be on the Ringer podcast. I'm going to be on Mina Kimes' podcast. We're hoping to get a lot of radio bits around the country. So I'm everywhere. I'm a big media whore, so I'm out there promoting this thing everywhere we can.
Fantastic. Hopefully we have some media pimps listening right now, and it'll go even further. All right. I want to get into it, and I want to talk about it, though. Finally got my hands on the digital copy and have been trying to check out whatever I could and gather all the insights. I can't wait to dive into the entire thing as I do every year. But first off, what's different about this year's book as opposed to the almanacs of the past?
The biggest thing that's different this year is a completely new upgraded Kubiak fantasy football projection system. So I've turned the fantasy football stuff at Football Outsiders over to our good friend Scott Spratt. You know him well, used to work for SIS, also worked for Pro Football Focus in the past doing fantasy for them. And he's really rebuilt our Kubiak projection system so that it basically is projecting, doing weekly projections for an entire season and then adding them up to do full projections for the year. And it sort of does a better job of incorporating the possibility of injuries. And, you know, we do a lot of, you know, trying to figure, there's still a lot of doing fantasy projections is an art as much as it is a science. And there's a real art to trying to figure out, trying to read coaches' minds as far as what their depth charts are going to be. But it does a better job of separating, for example, that running backs are used in different ways, goal line back, third down back, regular back, you know, slot targets, wide targets, sort of accounts for all of those things. So we think it's a really big upgrade on our Kubiak fantasy football projections. That's the biggest change for this year.
Yeah, I listened to last week's episode with you and Corey and Scott talking about it. And yeah, like you mentioned, I know Scott going back 5 years. When he had originally built the SIS football projections back in the day, that became the SIS and Football Outsiders projections that we jointly market. And then, of course, with him joining Football Outsiders now and rebuilding Kubiak, it sounds like he's incorporated every meaningful, every piece of signal that he could into making those really robust. And like you say, you're going to have to make a lot of decisions whenever you're doing any sort of thing about, and the decisions are going to be what makes it a little bit more of an art than a science. It seems to me like he's really tried to look at things from both a data-driven point of view, but also a really football-driven point of view. And I think that's the beauty of his of that system.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. My thing, particularly that he uses touchdown expectations as opposed to touchdowns to get a better idea of where touchdowns are likely to regress both positively and negatively, I think it's going to be really good. So I'm looking forward to using it in my own fantasy football drafts this year. And that's the biggest change. You know, there are a few things where we added some stats to some of the player tables, like the quarterback tables now have a completion percentage over expectation. But for the most part, the biggest change is Kubiak.
Another thing that's in the book every year, the pregame show, kind of the prelude to all things Football Outsiders. I was wondering, are there any potential updates that you considered making to that section?
I feel embarrassed because the answer is no. It hasn't been updated in a while except for last year or the year before, I think. I stuck in a research about play-action passing, right, that you don't actually need to run the ball more in order to be successful with play-action passing. A lot of the things in the pregame show, I keep meaning to, like, do an updated research on, and then August comes or July comes, and I'm like, oh, there is a time to do it. Every year I keep meaning to do it. Every year I run out of time to do it. But
amendments to the Constitution, it's got to be a big process to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the penalty stuff I need to do updated research on. Some of the kicking stuff that used to be in there I actually took out because we hadn't updated the research on it in a long time. But the basic ideas of it are still there. And listen, let's be honest. If you're enough of an analytics fan to listen to this podcast, you know almost everything that is in the pregame show. You know the idea that establishing the run isn't a thing. You know about the idea that field position is fluid. You know about the idea that the offensive line has more importance to the running game than people realize, but the quarterback is more important to pass protection than people realize. You understand the idea that team rankings based on total yardage are flawed. So this is much more of a section for newcomers, people who may be buying the Football Outsiders Almanac for the first time.
It's interesting to me, looking at the football analytics competition entries, some of them are really good. But then when you get some of the ones that are kind of in a slightly lesser tier, that maybe they didn't have the greatest understanding, you know, maybe they weren't working with great, really robust tools, and so it's hard for them to compete with some of the top-notch things. That's certainly something that happens. But I've noticed something else that surprised me a little bit more, which is some people with clearly a lot of technical skills that are really coming at this and trying to look at it as an analyst, and I'm surprised by some football concepts that they don't understand. It almost makes me think, I wonder if there should be a corollary for analysts that are new to football, where I think their priors would be really different than somebody like me or you who watched years and years of football before ever coming to this.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, there are definitely some places where you're like, okay, that doesn't make football sense. Or more likely what I find is that some analytics come out and then I'm like, okay, but how do you explain that to coaches? And how do you explain that to players? And how does that impact player psychology? It's not as much that the researchers don't understand football concepts. It's more, once the research is done, how do you then combine that with football concepts? That being said, like, let's be honest, the winners of the NFL's Big Data Bowl this year were two guys from, like, Austria who had never seen a football game in their lives. So there actually are times where not having any priors might be good for research.
Yeah, those guys, I guess, were just like Kaggle experts that have done a million of those competitions. They're like,
it was just a problem like any other problem to them, which is sort of interesting.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that whole side of things. I guess what I was getting at was more in terms of two things. Number one, just not understanding what different positions mean. That can be something that becomes really clear really quickly if somebody is coming at it from a different perspective. But the other one, EPA, for example, is a really great way to understand football, but it's also not the only way to understand football. And it has limitations too, especially that it can't be just attributed to one person. And then we can walk away and say that player had the most EPA. He's the best. So things like that.
Right. It's the same thing I say about DVOA in the book, which is when we say we're not separating players and we're not claiming to. So when we say, you know, wide receiver X has DVOA of such and such, we're talking about, you know, in conjunction with the quarterback, in conjunction with the scheme. There's definitely the other thing is, this is maybe my ego a little bit, but I do feel like there are a lot of posts in analytics Twitter that come out with research where I'm like, hey, that's something that I wrote about 10 years ago. And it's good to do new research that agrees with prior research because that just gives more backing to prior research. It shows that things are still true. But I do wish that sometimes people would be like, oh, you know, as, you know, Aaron Schatz said 10 years ago, or as Brian Burke said 10 years ago, hey, this is still true.
Yeah, attributing kind of original ideas where they came from is very important to me also. Did you have a favorite quote from the year in quotes?
Oh, Mike Vrabel being willing to cut off his dick to win the Super Bowl. That's the best quote of the year.
I saw one that I hadn't actually heard when I was just looking through the year in Minshew section. Him saying, quote, "I grabbed a bottle of Jack Daniels and a hammer. I go into my room, take a pull of Jack Daniels, put my hand down on the table, and boom, 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 one, two, three, and hit the hell out of my hand." End quote. This is when he would ask what he would do to be able to play more football, and he told the story of how he tried to get a medical redshirt in college by mashing his hand with a hammer. Just awesome stuff. As you credit in the book, that came from the Pardon My Take via Twitter.
Gardner Minshew is hardcore. I have a feeling we're going to be having good Gardner Minshew quotes for a few years.
I hope so. I really do. All right, let's get on the field and let's talk about the projections, because this is the first thing that I'm always fascinated to ask you about, and it's where I want to spend a lot of time today. First off, what leads the Ravens, who ran through last year's regular season, to project half a win behind not just the Chiefs, but also the Saints? You have the Ravens coming in third in projected win totals.
Yeah, it's interesting also because the Ravens have an easier schedule than either the Chiefs or the Saints. The difference is mostly offense. There's a couple of different variables. One is that there is a, you know, variable that projects the quarterback, tries to project the quarterback at least separate from his teammates. And Jackson comes in a little bit lower than Mahomes and Breeze. Another element is talent going on and off the teams. The Saints get a boost by picking up Emmanuel Sanders. The Ravens lose something for losing Hayden Hurst. And then the other is sort of regression to previous performance. We look not only at last year, but at the 2 years previous. And obviously last year is more important than the 2 years previous. But we are considering the 2 years previous because of things like, you know, this comes up a lot in the book, the plexiglass principle, the idea that teams that make big improvements tend to revert a little bit in the third year. And the Ravens made a huge offensive improvement last year, whereas the Chiefs and Saints offenses have been that good for years and years and years. The Ravens took a big jump up last year, and so you would expect them to come back to the pack a little bit.
That makes sense to me. I definitely could see, just knowing what we know about how these work, with offense being more important than defense, and what you're saying with the plexiglass principle and looking at a few more years and not just last year. That makes sense to me. What surprised me a little bit more, and I'm wondering if it surprised you, is that Pittsburgh comes in fourth in terms of average wins. And I'm wondering what you think is driving that.
Yeah, that's one of our more surprising projections. I will start it with sort of an asterisk, which is that there is a large gap, particularly in the offensive projections, between the top three teams and the rest of the league. So being fourth is not like they're not anywhere near as close to Baltimore as they are to fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth.
So if you're betting Super Bowl teams, you're betting those three teams way ahead of everybody else.
That's the way we have it this year. I don't know if we've had another year where the three top teams were so segmented from everyone else.
Yeah, one full average win separating Baltimore from Pittsburgh is worth mentioning.
Pittsburgh has the second easiest schedule. And the other thing is, offensive projection is above average. And their offense was so hideously bad last year. Like, really horrible. And so the improvement, let's assume that Roethlisberger comes back and he's good. Not as good as he's been in the past, but let's say a little bit better than average. Then combine that with the defense and the schedule, and Pittsburgh is a top team. Now, if he comes back and he's average or a little bit less, then they're more of a wild card contender. If he comes back and he's as good as he's been in the past, then they're like a top Super Bowl contender. I don't know what we're going to get from Roethlisberger coming back, but the way our system has it, they project 11th in offense. And that's just a huge, huge upgrade over where they were last year.
Yeah, I love their defense. They're built with a lot of speed and a lot of versatility right now. And I'm with you. I think it all comes back to that quarterback. And it's easy to forget that they actually won a whole bunch of games last year and were a playoff contender, even without Roethlisberger, with the bad play that they had at the quarterback position.
And their offense won't be as – their defense will not be as good as it was last year. They led the league in turnovers per drive, and they likely will not do that again because there's a lot of randomness and takeaways. But their defense should still be above average.
Yeah, if Minka Fitzpatrick can have another 10 return touchdowns this year or whatever it was, then I'd be impressed. All right, let's get to the next question. Your New England Patriots are projected half a win ahead of the Bills in the AFC East. How much did Cam Newton play into that? I'm guessing that would have been the other way around not too long ago.
A lot. It played into it a lot, yeah. The original projections had the Bills as our projected winner in the AFC East. And I should say we have the Bills down, mostly because we're just not convinced by Josh Allen. They actually have the highest defensive projection. But because the defensive projections have a much smaller range than the offensive projections, having the best defensive projection isn't worth, you know, anywhere near as much as having the best offensive projection. So Buffalo comes out to like a very average team. But New England came out worse than that, but we had Jared Stidham listed as their quarterback. So having Cam Newton as their quarterback, even if he's just average, is such an upgrade over what we expected from Stidham that it makes New England the division favorites. The Bills were the division favorites before that.
It's so funny to me just seeing, knowing Cam Newton and his history with all the coaching staff in Buffalo, and now seeing Josh Allen and them really trying to make Josh Allen into what Cam Newton was, and now he's there in the division. I'm hoping we play football, but I can't wait to see that one.
There's some irony to the fact that Josh Allen, the player he's probably most compared to, is Cam Newton. And so there's sort of irony that those two guys are now competing against each other for the division title.
Okay, rolling straight through, the San Francisco 49ers, I think they're tied for 10th in expected win totals with the Rams. Both teams are projected to finish behind the Seahawks. So I'm wondering what's driving that regression from the NFC champions.
This is the plexiglass principle that I talked about, which is considering not just what teams did last year, but what they did in the couple of years before. And I mean, we actually upped what San Francisco had done in previous years because we wanted to try to control for the Garoppolo injury. You know, we didn't want to project them based on the backup quarterbacks that they had in that year that Garoppolo was hurt. But the fact is, in 35 years of Football Outsiders stats, the San Francisco 49ers are the first team that ever went up 20% on both sides of the ball in the same year. Like, there's only 7 or 8 teams that ever went up by 15% on both sides of the ball in the same year, and there had never been a team that had gone up by 20% in both sides of the ball in the same year. So
yeah, I've got my eyes on Nick Bosa this year to see, without DeForest Buckner, if he can be the same player that he was, if that whole defense can be what it was. I'm certainly curious about that, in addition to what you're saying about...
I'm more thinking the secondary, just because we know secondary play is inconsistent from year to year. But I'm also thinking the offense more than the defense. It also, the projection system also did not like the loss of Sanders. I think there's real questions about the wide receivers. And I know everybody's going to say, okay, but Kyle Shanahan is such an amazing designer of offenses. How on earth can you project San Francisco to have anything less than a top offense? And the answer is, that's exactly what you would have said about Sean McVay and the Rams a year ago.
And wasn't the offense a little bit broken before Sanders got there?
It was like, not as good. Part of that was Juszczyk being injured. So they were down when Juszczyk was injured. But even without Juszczyk injured, they went up when Sanders arrived. Yeah.
So I think that figures into that too. And then one thing that generally, looking at your projections compared to other projections that people have, it becomes really clear that the quarterback projection is an important part of this, and understanding the quarterback play kind of parsed out from the team play. I think it's reasonable that Jimmy Garoppolo is not going to drive his team as high up the rankings as the quarterbacks that you have in Baltimore, New Orleans, and Kansas City.
And I mean, that's the main reason why Russell Wilson is the main reason why Seattle is our favorite in that division. They have the best quarterback in the division, so they're the favorite in the division. We have all four teams in the NFC West have expected wins where the mean is above 8.
That's impressive. I wouldn't have expected that, especially from Arizona. But that's, you know, I'd certainly expect them to get better. So it's not so far off.
Yeah, they're the lowest of the four, but they came out at 8.1.
Okay, and aside from who you've mentioned, who do you consider the biggest surprise of the projections?
Here we go again. Last year, we had them as close to the top of their division, and then we redid our projections right before the season, and they ended up as our division favorites, and we had to try to explain it. And this year, we ended up in the same place, the Detroit Lions. We have the Detroit Lions as the very, very, very narrow favorites in the NFC North. All four teams in the NFC North win the division in 23% of our simulations. So like the range of winning the division goes from 23 to 27%. But I don't think anybody would see Detroit as a major contender in that division. But their offense was much, much better before Matthew Stafford got injured. And there's a number of reasons to believe their defense will be better, you know, starting with the amount of talent that they added this offseason. Not just Jamie Collins, but adding, Okuda.
Right.
Jeff the top Okuda. Cornerback in the draft. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the parts of the projection system is top defensive draft picks, because we found that defensive draft picks have a more predictable impact on defense than they do on offense. It's not that they're more important, but, you know, offensive impact seems to be more, have a wider range. So it doesn't come out as something that you find important in the projection system, but defensive it does. So, and that's a very high draft pick. So we really like Okuda. And Derek Klassen did some research earlier this offseason showing that top round cornerbacks over the last couple of years, like over the last 6 or 7 years, have just as good charting stats as free agent cornerback. So like if you're looking to add a cornerback, like getting a top draft pick is a good way to go. And Okuda is, you know, really talented. Combine that with an easy schedule and the Packers and the Vikings being down, and we have Detroit as the favorite in that division, even though I think they're at like 8.1 mean wins. So it's not like we have them really hot. Like, you know, we have Detroit lower than we have the worst team in the NFC West, which is Arizona.
Yeah, you know, what I like about Detroit is what you mentioned, Matthew Stafford. I think people sleep on him. I think he gets a little bit, maybe Matt Ryan type treatment, where people just, I don't know if they're bored by them and they just don't see them on TV enough to really realize how good those guys are and how good they are every year. I think Matthew Stafford is a huge impact there. What I don't like is just everything about the Lions organization just doesn't seem to be adding up to a team that's going anywhere to me.
Yeah, that's the worry. We talk about that a bit in the chapter, definitely.
You know, for every good move, for every Jeff Okuda where you think, okay, that makes sense, there's probably at least one or two moves where you're kind of scratching your head. So I'm very ambivalent about Detroit this year. I'm not so ambivalent about Chicago. I don't have a lot of love for Chicago. I know you don't think that Foles is going to be the answer there as much as they're hoping. I can't believe they paid Foles in the trade and then Cam Newton gets what he got. But that's a different story for a different day. What's driving Green Bay and Minnesota being a little bit lower than I might expect?
Green Bay is a lot of regression from the defense. And the fact that they just were nowhere near as good as their record last year, which I think everyone in the analytics community pretty much knows. They were, by DVOA, the second worst team to ever go 13-3. Minnesota, there's a few things in there. Loss of talent. Certainly, Stephon Diggs on the offensive side of the ball, Everson Griffin on the defensive side of the ball, as well as like their entire secondary, even though I will fully admit that losing what Xavier Rhodes did last year is probably a good thing, not a bad thing, that the system may be missing a little bit. Right. And then some other coming, you know, they were very high in takeaways per drive. That tends to regress. They were the best team in the league against the run in short yardage. That tends to regress a little bit. So all of those things. And then they come out with a tougher schedule than Green Bay and Minnesota have a tougher schedule than Detroit or Chicago also, because of sort of how last year's first, second place teams in the which divisions they have to play work out.
Yeah, I think for people that like betting overs and unders, reading those chapters on the NFC North, I think is going to be really interesting. I can't wait to dig into those, because anytime you see numbers like that are a little bit surprising, that make you kind of question what your beliefs are, I think it can be helpful to do some critical thinking and to try to make some decisions of, okay, is there something that I was missing here, or is there something that the numbers might be missing, or is it somewhere in between?
The whole division is very tightly packed around 8-8, and that's without even considering COVID-19, I think when you consider like what our projection system is not reflecting about COVID-19, I think that, you know, because we can't objectively analyze what COVID-19 will do, but we can subjectively analyze it. And I think we all agree it's very likely that random players are going to disappear for weeks at a time because of COVID-19, which probably brings teams even closer to being 8-8, like creates more randomness in the results, which brings teams closer to all being 8-8. So like that division really becomes a complete coin flip, except you need a four-sided coin.
Well, yeah, from a projection standpoint, I think you would move everybody towards 8-8 because you have so much uncertainty. The way it plays out is it might move further away from 8-8 because teams might be impacted at different amounts based on how COVID hits their city or their particular players or anything else. So the way it plays out, I think it adds randomness, but the way you have to project it is that we can't predict that randomness. So I think that's what you're saying. All right. And then which team from the bottom half do you like to outperform their projection the most?
I will say two. It's interesting because you look at bottom half teams and it's just our nature as fans, especially the fans of the teams. But even if you're not a fan of that specific team, it's easier to look at teams and go, that team's going to be better than we're projecting, than it is to look at a team and go, that team's going to be worse than we're projecting. Because you have in your mind the sort of best case scenario for a team. But I will say two. One is Minnesota. I do think that Minnesota has prepared itself for its salary cap player losses better than most teams do. And I like Zimmer and the way he coaches defense. So I think their defense will not regress as much as we're expecting. And I think that they will be better.
And I think I like Gary Kubiak. I think Gary Kubiak had a positive effect on them last year. And I think it'll continue in that direction.
If you ask me subjectively, who do I think is the most likely team to win the NFC North, even though they're last in our objective numbers, subjectively, I think it's Minnesota. The other is Cleveland. The numbers don't see the story, but we all know the narrative. Like, we all know there's a lot of talent there. We all know last year's coaching was terrible. We all believe this year's coaching will be much better. There is a narrative there to explain why Cleveland takes a big step forward. And I do buy that that narrative is a good possibility. In a way, it's sort of the difference between doing bottom-up projections versus top-down projections. Some projections, like what Mike Clay does at ESPN, are bottom-up. He looks at the talent on the team and then projects from there. Football Outsiders projections are top-down. While we do have some variables that look at talent coming in and out of the team, a lot of the variables we use are just the team performance, because I think our belief is sort of that individual performance is harder to predict from year to year than the way that team performance tends to trend in certain ways, like the plexiglass principle. But if you look at it from the bottom up, Cleveland looks better. Because we all admit, you know, guys like Odell Beckham and Myles Garrett are hugely talented, and, you know, they've got good, talented young guys in their secondary, and, you know, you can believe that Baker Mayfield will bounce back with better coaching. So I believe the narrative story about Cleveland is a good possibility, but the numbers don't see it.
And this is a great time for a public service announcement that anytime that people are trying to use analytics, projections, especially holy grail statistics and things that really try to account for lots of things, understanding the decisions that go into those, like you're talking about top-down versus bottom-up projections, understanding that will help you understand how to use what those projections are telling you, because I know Aaron and I would agree that the tendency for people to just jump on this number says this, and that means that that's the truth or that it's completely wrong and there's no room for nuance is not a really useful way to use these statistics. So having that in mind, just another good reminder there.
And team people tend to jump on, this team has so much talent, they have to be good. Forgetting the fact that there's a lot more randomness in the NFL than you think, and there are a lot of teams with a lot of talent that aren't good.
And hey, if games, if part of the season ends up getting chopped down, we could have a season where if you have a teams that are only playing 12 games or something like that, there'd be even more randomness.
Oh God, the baseball season is going to be crazy with only 60 games. There's going to be so much randomness in that.
Yeah, and baseball games are coin flips half the time anyway.
So football, same thing. If football was down to 10 or 12, you'd have it's just going to be random.
Mark Simon suggested that we play the random page game where I flip to random pages and ask you questions about whatever I see on those. So I am flipping through to page number 106. I see some talk about the Colts And Andrew Potter notes on this page that the Colts have the easiest schedule in the NFL. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, indeed. They have the easiest projected schedule. That's why there are division favorites. And I think the whole division has easy schedules, but they have the easiest schedule. We have Houston down. We have Tennessee down, not as much as Houston. We have Jacksonville not really getting better. So, yeah, Indianapolis looks good for this year.
I'm fascinated to see how Phillip Rivers fits in there. I liked what Andrew said about how they're kind of in win-now mode with Phillip Rivers there this year, but at the same time, they're not mortgaging their future in any sort of a way. And aside from the DeForest Buckner move, it was a typically measured offseason from them.
Yeah, I mean, that's another franchise that I think we all agree is well-run.
On page 257, this page of the book breaks down some quarterbacks. It's got Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Teddy Bridgewater. A very nice random page to find. In terms of DVOA, I'm looking. It's unsurprising that Brees is consistently awesome and that Brady has been moving in the wrong directions for the last 3 years. But the fun fact for me is that Bridgewater's DVOA was way ahead of Brady's last year, of course, in Bridgewater's limited time, and it was on par with Brady's DVOA in 2018. Is that about track for you?
Yeah, I think that that is an element of where, you know, scheme and teammates do matter in our numbers. And obviously, he's in a really great scheme in New Orleans, and he had good teammates like Michael Thomas. But I think also Bridgewater is underrated. I think, you know, he did show last year he is a good quarterback. And Brady, I mean, listen, I don't think he's lost it as much as the numbers seem to suggest, but I don't think he's the guy he used to be. And I say that as someone who watches a lot of Tom Brady. There is a lot of frustrated throwing the ball just out of the wide receiver's, like, range because he's so concerned with not throwing it to a defensive player that he throws it where the offensive player can't get it to it either. And some of that is the offensive player not getting separation, but I mean, I do think he's going to bounce back this year somewhat because of the weapons he has are so good. His numbers are going to bounce back. But I don't think he quite fits what Tampa Bay's done on offense in the past. It's going to be weird to see how they combine the Brady style and the Arians.
Yeah, I hope we get to see it. And yeah, we were talking about plexiglass principle before. It'd be shocking to see Brady not at least get more positive into the DVOA range this year.
How we have him projected. We have him projected better than Bridgewater because he has better weapons than what Bridgewater does this year.
At least Bridgewater won't be having to play with the 11 guys on defense because I think they're even worse on that side of the ball.
Oh, that's – we have Carolina as the worst defense in the league, yeah.
All right, and then flipping through – page 396, I hope this doesn't become a very sad page very soon. Ohio State previews as the number two team in the country. There's college football in here, as you've done for several years now, with the college football breakdowns. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is already wrong. It was wrong before we even published because if Ohio State is only going to play a conference schedule, we're going to have to update everything from the college football section on the site in the weeks before college football starts, if college football starts. I'm hoping that our college football section doesn't become a big alternative history novel, but we do have previews of the top 50 teams by our combined projections that combine Brian Fremo and Bill Connolly's numbers and write-ups on the top 50 teams, projections for all 130 teams based on the schedules that they were scheduled to play as of a couple months ago. But what actually happens in college football remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the alternative history novel because we were even talking about the Bill James handbook this year. If the baseball season doesn't go off as planned and they don't end up getting the season in, we think that's what we might be limited to for the Bill James handbook this year. It's just maybe we write about if each team had won the World Series, what it would have looked like. Because hopefully it won't come to that, I guess, is what it really
comes. Well, you already have no year of minor league baseball to project how players would be if prospects will be a year older, and there are prospects who would not have been ready for the major leagues this year who will be ready for the major leagues in 2021 and will have no 2020 stats to suggest how to project them. And the same thing is going to happen for football. We already know that it seems pretty likely that FCS is not going to play at all. Mm-hmm. FBS is going to be more limited. We're hoping that they play. But what happens if we have a 2021 draft where nobody has seen these players for a year? So players, you know, just like minor league baseball prospects mature with age, football players mature with age. There are guys who blossom in their senior seasons or their redshirt senior seasons or junior seasons or whatever it is. And you aren't going to have any of that film if these guys don't play football this year. So, like, how do we do our projection systems like Saxier and Cubase if guys don't have senior seasons? I have no idea.
Yeah. Like you said, I really hope it doesn't come to that. Already it's, you know, we've gotten 80 people in camp instead of 90 people in camp and no preseason. So lots of guys that should be in the league now are never going to get their shot. And that's going to be an effect.
Or they're going to get their shot, but they're going to get their shot in 2021 at the age of 24 instead of in 2020 at the age of 23. I bet you're going to see a lot of like undrafted free agents make teams next year, because some of them would have made teams this year, but they're not going to because of the limited preseason.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of another COVID-inspired thing that personally has affected me. I was engaged at the beginning of the year, and I went and we started trying to look for wedding venues for 2021, and we're finding that so many 2020 weddings have been postponed that they're already taking the dates in 2021. So that's probably an apt comparison for where the players are going to feel pinched. It's going to become a situation where you're going to have a couple of classes of undrafted guys that are all going to be competing against each other.
Yep.
All right. Well, I can't recommend this book enough for everybody. I can't wait to read and dive in even more. And I will be looking out to see where you are in terms of the radio across the country and keeping up with all the various podcasts.
And I should point out also for people that we're doing a promotion this year where we're going to give a portion of the proceeds of every book that we sell to the United Way's COVID-19 Relief and Recovery Fund, trying to do our part to help with the COVID-19 situation. So if you buy this year's book, you're doing your part to help with the COVID-19 situation as well.
That's fantastic. Get a great book for a great cause. On that note, we'll sign off. Thank you to all the listeners. Again, be sure to check out the SIS Football Analytics Challenge for the United Negro College Fund. You can find it through sportsinfosolutions.com or our Twitter at sportsinfo_SIS, where we will be releasing the finalists, and we will be releasing information about that the actual competition, the finalists. We will have three finalists on YouTube Live on Wednesday, July 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I'll be there. Aaron will be there live, and then we will have the winners on the Off the Charts podcast shortly thereafter to discuss some of their research. So if you can check that out, it's awesome. And the GoFundMe page is still open and available if you'd like to donate to a great cause. We're also recruiting 2020 football video scouts. We've almost filled out our video scout group for this 2020 season. If you're interested in applying, you can still do so by heading to the career section of our website at sportsinfosolutions.com, and we will be starting training very soon. Of course, go get the Football Outsiders Almanac. I don't know what else you're listening at this point for if you haven't bought that thing yet. This is the reading that you need as a football fan every year. For my co-host Aaron Schatz and our producer Justin Stein, I'm Matt Manicharian, and thank you for joining us for the latest episode of the Off the Charts Football Podcast.